as we go towards this five-year vision, like I think wallets end up becoming a type of super app. It can be a place where you can play some of your games, use your crypto because the funds are right there. You could also then transact with merchants. You can message each other. You can start weaving together sort of your own new social graph that is on chain. And I think the goal here is like making those use cases very, very simple.
That's Chintan Turakhia, lead engineer at Coinbase Wallet. Not too long ago, we had a focused conversation on where the future of wallets are heading, why he believes the end game is a super app in your pocket, and how creators can leverage the inbox to build and communicate with their collectors. It's a jam-packed episode, so I hope you enjoy our conversation. Chintan, welcome to the Mint Podcast. Thank you for being on. I'm so excited to have you here. We've been working on this one for a minute now. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks, Adam, for having me on. I'm super pumped. Happy, nice, sunny morning over here. So ready to go.
What's keeping you excited the most right now?
What's keeping me excited? That's a good question. I'm assuming you were talking about crypto and Web3.
Not crypto. We can get into whatever you want.
What keeps me excited in the non-crypto and Web3 space is like food plus all this like really cool AI tech that's coming in.
Okay.
With LLMs and generative AI. I think it's really great. And then on the other side, I'm a big foodie too. So that always keeps me happy, just finding the latest and greatest and restaurants and places to go and try. But I think in the Web3 space, I'm really excited that, you know, despite it being a bear market, I'm excited it allows everyone to sort of focus on like what's important, right? Because bear market and in bull markets, you get a lot of excitement, you know, catch the wave, catch the train. A lot of it is speculation and, you know, to each their own, but in bear markets, we get a focus on like what really matters, right? How do we actually grow adoption of this actually really amazing new computing primitive, right? And how do we grow adoption of it in healthy, sustainable ways? And I love, you know, as of maybe probably the past like 4 or 5 months, this real shift towards like utility. How do we get users trying adopting crypto for daily driver use cases? And that's what's gotten me like really excited. Because if you can like order a coffee and pay for it with crypto, that's like a step. I know coffee is like a really simple example, but it's also a really straightforward type of transaction. And so I'm excited just to keep exploring like utility-based use cases for adoption.
How is it that you ended up geeking out over the tech side and the utility side over crypto versus the degenerate side of crypto, which most people tend to be more excited about? And maybe that's even a segue into your background. Like, how did you even get into crypto?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I think I'm pretty new to crypto, relatively speaking. And probably around 2019, I guess, is when I, you know, touched crypto for the first time. And well, like many people, lost a bunch of money and didn't hodl. But I think it actually came before I was at Coinbase. I was at Uber. Uber was a great place. Awesome. Right. And like, I'm one of those people who loves jumping into scary, gnarly, hard problems. And Uber was this really unique problem of just like moving things around the world. You push a button and a car shows up. You push a button and food shows up. That's pretty amazing. And the technology behind the scenes to make that real is really complicated. It's really challenging knowing where the drivers are, where the riders are, and how to actually like grow a healthy three-sided marketplace. But after a while, you know, I wanted to try something different. And at Uber, I was like building lots of really cool tech for the driver side of the marketplace, like pricing, experimentation, positioning. And it was really like a deep understanding of just like how things moved across the world. But I wanted to try something different. And honestly, like I wasn't looking for anything crypto specific. In fact, like I had already made a notion in my head, like I don't want to touch fintech at all, right? And out of nowhere, you know, a friend reached out and said, hey, just come chat with us here at Coinbase. Like check it out. You'll get to talk to really great people like Jesse. Jesse was one of the first people I chatted with at Coinbase, and like, I'm very grateful for that. And I think like the tipping point, as I sort of learned and understood more what Coinbase's mission is, and what these really amazing primitives, like a compute layer called Ethereum, like what these primitives are trying to unlock in their actual fundamental properties, it started really resonating with me. I'm someone who just loves efficiency. I think like any place where there's, you know, going back to the food and restaurant stuff, any place that there's a line, like things are inefficient. Like how to make things more efficient, how to make things easier, how to make things, you know, simple for the everyday user. And I think there's this like one real tipping point story where when I was looking around for jobs, I went to the bank. I went to the bank because a friend needed to open up a bank account. And so we went to a bank, like brick and mortar, and this friend was from another country. And so like, you got to have the right documentation, right? So I went to the bank and was like, hey, just want to open up a bank account. Like, here's all the paperwork. It says I needed to bring this exact paperwork based on your website. Can you all help us out? Person looks at it. It's like, not so sure if we can really do this. I got to go check. I was like, but it's on your website. It says bring document A, B, and C. They're like, okay, let me go back in the back and check. So they go and talk to the person, come back half an hour later. Yeah, we're not sure if we can do this. Let me try again. I'll bring my supervisor. Another half an hour later, hitting buttons on the computer, trying to go through their process. Like it's, you know, just not going anywhere, and get like pretty frustrated at that point. I open up the Coinbase app. I take a picture of the driver's license and boom, my friend has a Coinbase account and I can send money over. They have a banking account, basically. They can put their, you know, deposit into it, and it's like done. I was like, this is amazing. It took like a minute to do this, and I've been standing here for like 2 hours. Like, this system is broken. And I think that was the real thing that like tipped me over to like, there's a better way to interact with our money. There's a better way to move value. There's a better way to like engage in financial systems.
And the core of all that is the wallet. So to know that you actually lead engineering for Coinbase Wallet, there's a lot of, I guess, similarities between that aha moment, that realization, to actually what you've dedicated a lot of your life to right now, solving. And part of fixing inefficient systems is wallet onboarding. I'm curious, how do we actually fix that? And how do we do that in a way where we can usher in, quote unquote, a billion users? I know that's something Coinbase is very vocal about. Wallets end up being a point of friction for many users.
Yeah. I think like you have to start with the basic fundamental premise, like what is a wallet and why does someone even need a wallet, right? Because you go to any person and they're like, hey, you know, go get this wallet. It's a self-custody wallet. It's non-custodial. It's Web3. You've already lost them with those words. They don't understand. It's like, hey, I already have a wallet. It's like in my pocket, or I have something on my iPhone called an Apple wallet, right? Like, why is this thing different? And I think for a few reasons, like the way we think about it here at Coinbase is we're trying to build. We really think we have the best wallet out there. It's simple, safe, reliable. And it's designed for users to help them like get onboarded into crypto, to get onboarded into Web3 in an easy, simple way. And obviously the advantage of a wallet, like a self-custodial wallet, is you own the keys, you own the assets. Right, you're in charge. You can't get rugged by a bank. You can't get rugged by anyone else. You can't have your funds taken away from you unless you've like authorized it, right? So you're in full control here. And when you think about a wallet, like it's actually like fascinating and amazing. If I want to buy some goods from someone across the world, like halfway across the world, they literally just need to download an app and share their Ethereum address, and they can get money into their wallet. They can get funds into their wallet. It's actually fascinating. You don't need to ask for anyone's permission. You don't need to go to a bank. You don't need to get approval. You don't need to go to a government. It's there. You download an app, boom, you have your Ethereum address and you can receive value. So like, as we start thinking about this now, like that's amazing. That's amazing that with a button push, like you can be your own bank, right? But how do you make then the onboarding easier? Because if you think about where wallets started off as, they were complicated. Many are still complicated, you know, and you onboard a user by first asking them, hey, create your wallet. Okay, what does that even mean? It's like generating, you know, keys, generating private keys on the device itself. And then you're like, hey, but also while you're generating this wallet, remember to memorize these 12 words, right? It's like, what do I do with these 12 words? It's like, if you lose them, you'll lose everything. It's like, it's actually really scary. It's like, it's confusing and scary because everyone has been trained for the last, you know, 10, 20 years, like email address and password, and that'll give you access to your account. And it's a very different sort of primitive here with wallets. So what we've been doing in Coinbase Wallet to make the onboarding easier is one, just make it like lightning fast, right? You should push the button to create a wallet and you get a wallet. But also there's new tech and advancements coming up, right? So one, like very simple things if you start off with is making the backup, like backing up your seed phrase and backing up that recovery phrase, like make that really simple. Make that one button push. But even then, folks can forget their backup password, things like that, right? And we remind users a lot, like, hey, store these keys. And I think if you think about the fundamental problem is now all the keys, like that, those 12 words, it's the responsibility of the user to store. So where do we go from there? We can like abstract away things, right? So one is there's really great technology from MPC, like multi-party computation, where a user can onboard to a wallet with a button push and keys are generated. They're split into different shards. Not getting into the weeds here, but like it gives the user an ability in case they've lost like their phone or something, they can recover. They can recover using different shards that are available, like different parts of the keys that are available in different parts, whether it's on a server or with a friend, like social recovery, things like that. I think ultimately, like we have to move to a world where the creation of a wallet is sort of like in the background, it's abstracted away from a user. And it just happens. And you get them to like experience, you know, buying a coffee as fast as you can or playing a game on, you know, an on-chain game as fast as you can, where wallet's like the underlying substrate and it's doing what it's supposed to. But you've brought this like, honestly, like this Web2 style experience into a Web3 world.
So I know we're transitioning into what Web3 calls like account abstraction, smart wallets, smart contract wallets. It sounds as if a lot of what you're maybe imagining here revolves around that primitive.
Yeah. I think, you know, if we start thinking about these things as like binary, I think it's not so great, right? Like, for example, at the base, there's self-custody. You hold your keys, you put them in a secret vault somewhere, right? You can layer on MPC, which is still key management, and that's great. And you can, you know, separate shards. If we then start thinking about what you described and what the industry describes as like smart wallets or smart contract-based wallets or account abstraction, things do get easier where the user doesn't have to necessarily manage the keys, right? It's actually a smart contract code that is governing the management, the creation, and sort of the constraints and rules around a specific wallet. So I think like FinTech is a great example. It's taken off. It's an interesting use case. But if you think about the fundamental, it just made getting a wallet really simple, right? Like log in with some sort of Web2 identity, your email as an example, and then prove who you are by also logging into your Twitter account and authenticating, right? And it's this very familiar feel, right, that makes onboarding easier. And we don't need to necessarily think about managing the keys and remembering the keys. But also, the important thing about these sort of account abstracted type of wallets is really understanding like who does have access to those keys, who does hold the keys, right? And is it still self-custody at the end of the day? Where if you want to pick up and walk away with those funds, you can. You have that right to. You have that sovereignty to. But as we start thinking about some of these really great advancements out there, where onboarding a wallet is as simple as like logging in with an email, I think we start then making crypto and adoption feel familiar and easier. And we get the user really closer to like the end goal, which is, hey, try this game, pay for some coffee, or whatever the activity they're trying to do, versus like where we are today, which is like, hey, do these first five steps, like onboard, activate, memorize your seed phrase, etc., and then we'll show you this cool experience.
You talked about you being big on utility. I'm curious, what is your like 5-year vision of what you believe a wallet should be? And I ask this because recently Coinbase Wallet integrated XMTP, and now you could do wallet-to-wallet messaging. This was a big thing in the last cycle that people were imagining and fantasizing over as a key feature to enable further adoption of crypto. And you guys were the first ones to implement that and really show the world like the capabilities behind what wallet-to-wallet communication could look like at scale. What is your big picture of what a wallet will be 5 years from now, beyond just transacting, maybe beyond just messaging? Is this a new identity for an individual in the world?
We're really excited to add messaging into Coinbase Wallet powered by XMTP. And I think it does unlock these utility use cases. So if we think about like the evolution of Coinbase Wallet, we started off as, and we still are, a self-custody wallet. It was focused on power user use cases like swapping, bridging, staking, etc. And all of that is native in the experience. And it has all the power user features you would need and you would want. So you can go into our wallet, you can open it up, you can fund it through Coinbase Pay, you can then swap immediately, it's lightning fast, you can bridge to sort of any network you want, etc. And there's like a built-in dApp browser. So we got, you know, all the right power user features laid out. But then as we start thinking about our goal, like how do we bring the next billion people on board? How do we bring them on chain? People need a reason to go in and use a wallet, right? Besides it storing sort of your crypto assets because it's self-custody, what else do you want to do with it? The next billion users aren't going to be like swapping on a daily basis, or they're not going to be bridging on a daily basis. Like these things eventually are abstracted away over time too. So then how do we think about it? How do we like, where do we want to take these users? Why should they be even coming and trying to go on chain? Well, maybe one, they're crypto curious. Maybe they just want to explore like, hey, what is out there? Is there some art or NFT collection that's trending? Cool. My friend told me about, you know, this one sort of DeFi application where I could take some Ethereum and stake it, like a very basic example, and I can earn yield on it. That's cool. Like I like to hold crypto. I like to stake it. I want it to be super easy, right? Then as we start thinking, what are daily driver use cases? Like I'm holding this crypto, what do I do with it? So then we move towards this world of like daily driver, go and buy some coffee, go to your local bodega and buy some vegetables, right? Or go to a clothing store and buy goods there, right? There's really cool examples we're starting to see pop up, like from Blackbird.xyz, which is pushing for restaurant loyalty. And this is like a great intersection of my passions of like food and stuff and crypto. But, you know, think about the primitives. We try to think about these primitives that Web3 and blockchain technology unlocks. So one, when you onboard, like what is the first step on a wallet? You should establish your identity, right? And we made that really easy in Coinbase Wallet. You can claim an ENS, a CBID, it's free. You can claim your identity. And why is identity important? Well, no one wants to talk to like a long 0x address. You can't remember. But I do like talking to adamlevy.eth, right? Or adamlevy.cbid. And so that's easy. So establish your identity. And why does your identity matter? Well, it's you. Like it is globally unique. And that's actually pretty interesting because it's different than an email where you are permissioned and you have to like talk to a Google server or Facebook server or something like that. Like you can be adamlevy.eth and that's it. You're the only adamlevy.eth in the world. And even better, anyone in the world can reach you, right? So now if we start unpacking, what does it even mean to reach someone? I could send you crypto, right? Because I know your ENS. But beyond that, like I couldn't really do anything until messaging came into the picture. Where now I could be like, hey, Adam, really great to see you at Vasari last week. By the way, here's $5 that I owe you for the coffee, right? Or, hey, Adam, I really like this, you know, this Bored Ape in your NFT collection, or this beautiful art from Claire Silver. Like, are you willing to trade it and swap, right? And so it starts helping folks that are establishing IDs connect with each other. But I think, like, as we go towards this 5-year vision, like, I think wallets end up becoming a type of super app where your identity is present in the wallet, where you have access to funds, and those funds are very, very close to use cases where you can spend those funds, right? And action on an on-chain verb like stake or bridge or swap or even spend and send, right? And so the easier we can make that connection between, hey, this is a wallet, it has your identity, you can reach to anyone with a similar ENS identity, right? But also we've made it really easy for you to identify and discover daily driver use cases like spend with local merchants or engage in online commerce, whatnot, and also make that really easy to actually like execute on those actions. I think then we start seeing this vision of a super app evolve, where it can be a place where you can play some of your games, use your crypto because the funds are right there, play games in a browser. You could also then transact with merchants. You can message each other. You can start weaving together sort of your own new social graph that is on chain. And I think the goal here is like making those use cases very, very simple.
I love how you mentioned the super app, because to me, my wallet feels like it will become my everything app. It feels like everything that I will do, I will want to increasingly put my levy.eth behind that and show my world, show my audience, show my community that I'm doing X, Y, and Z on chain. And I'm the proof in the pudding. Like, I'm the practitioner. I'm the active user that's doing whatever it is and engaging with different experiences online. And to me, I feel like I've already adopted part of that mentality where I do have other wallets, but my primary wallet is levy.eth. And if anybody wants to reach me now, they can message me on levy.eth. And I'm likely to respond to those notifications more because it feels like a less cluttered inbox than like my Telegram or my email at the moment. It feels like a more intimate experience. Like, I've been able to find like new guests through the for the podcast on there. I've been able to find BD opportunities for Bello from wallet-to-wallet messaging. And it's become this medium that has unlocked new opportunities for me in a different experience that I have yet to have previously in Web3.
Yeah, and I love that. I love that like it's enabled these experiences, because like you can drop in a messaging type of feature into a wallet, but like why, right? One, it's what you described. Like, you're able to connect with anyone with a .eth in the world. You don't need to know if they're Blue Bubble or Green Bubble, right? You don't need to know if they're on Facebook or Google or WhatsApp or Signal or Telegram. You just send a message using Coinbase Wallet to the .eth address. And the beautiful thing here is like the composable inbox, right? That this inbox can exist on any client that supports XMTP. And I think that's a like really, really magical. And then I think the second thing, like what we did in Coinbase Wallet for messaging is like, you know, folks already have their existing social graph, maybe on Signal, Telegram, WhatsApp, Twitter, et cetera. Cool. And to build up the on-chain graph can take some time. That's an like important problem to solve. But we wanted to like drive with utility. So like inside Coinbase Wallet messaging, I found it incredibly valuable to be able to like, hey, I met you in person. I know you're .eth. And if I need to send you money, I can. And what really interesting example pops up for me a lot, and this is why we did Base Cafe, where we take over like coffee shops or do our own coffee shop and make it fully on chain, is if you think about it, any merchant in the world can download a wallet, can pay a few bucks to get an ENS, and they are accessible. They are accessible. No matter where you're sitting in the world, you can reach out to a merchant. You can reach out to a merchant and say, hey, I was traveling to Lisbon and I remember your shop and I remember this piece of clothing there or this art. Like, you know what? I'm back home, but I want to buy it. How can we make this happen? You can reach them, right? Sure, you can pick up the phone and call them too. That's one possibility, but I can then transact in one fluid step where I message them, they confirm, boom, I can pay them right then and there. And you start unlocking really interesting use cases, because today, merchants, have a POS system that has no messaging, has a phone line, maybe, has WhatsApp, maybe. They have all these different like systems that don't really talk to each other, right? And if I'm a merchant, having one place where I can receive and send value like crypto or USDC or stablecoins, and also engage and interact with my users or customers, I can also then start thinking about loyalty. So Adam, like if I'm running my pizza shop and you message me and be like, great, thanks for coming by, I can airdrop you like a coupon. A coupon, say, come back, get 5% off. Like anyone that's transacted with me, I can, you know, engage with them and create loyalty programs. And also on the flip side, for like a really open marketplace, any other pizza shop that's on chain could see the activity going into my wallet and maybe realize like, hey, Adam really loves pizza. Let me send, you know, I'm the competitive pizza shop. I'm going to send Adam a 10% voucher or, you know, come here and try us out, get the pizza for free. So it opens up this like really interesting dynamic, in my opinion, of like a very truly open marketplace where customers ultimately have the choice. Merchants have full flexibility to engage with any customer that is on chain. And then it just becomes like who's providing the, you know, the highest value for the customer.
Is there a world where the wallet doesn't become the everything app? Like what would hinder that future?
Tell me more. What do you mean?
So my wallet right now is everything that I do. When I connect to an application, I sign with Levy.eth. We've been dreaming about and like romanticizing right now of how the wallet ends up being like your core identity online. And Levy.eth ends up evolving in this new internet world, in this new online world, this on-chain world, where let's just like be extreme for a bit. Almost everything that I do ends up being through that wallet. I'm curious if there's a world where that ends up not being the case, because it's hard to see that doesn't unfold and that becomes the case. But I'm curious, is there anything that you've thought of or the Coinbase team has thought of where maybe the wallet isn't the central point of an individual's identity? I may be in the sky a bit here, but I'm intentionally going there.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. So I guess like really the question is like, what are maybe some of the hurdles for a person not having their wallet being, you know, their core identity? I don't know, just like thinking aloud here, I think one possibility is, A, we just haven't simplified, as an industry, we haven't simplified the experience to onboard and the experience to use on-chain technology or go on-chain. We haven't simplified it enough. I think that's like going to be a huge hurdle. And I know many people are focused on that. And it's great to see like, you know, in this market, like how folks are making things easier and, you know, fewer clicks and really thinking through human interface design. I think the other side of that is if there are no actual use cases. And that's why I like keep going back to utility here, right? If we're building better products and building better tech to make it easier to onboard, on the flip side, at the end of that onboarding journey, someone has to have a purpose for using a wallet, right? And to do that on-chain activity. And you can see like with recent things like On-Chain Summer, with the Base cafes that we've been popping up with, and many, many, you know, other examples of Web3 players driving for utility, I think we're going to start seeing more and more of that sort of wave coming through. But I also think like there's a world possibly where if we think about like Web2 entities and companies, I think the bigger question is, do we imagine a world where it's like a Web2, Web3 hybrid where data still siloed and kept because the, you know, these Web2 companies want to keep the data, right? They are creating sort of like this white label experience with their apps that use some tidbits of Web3 tech, like maybe an NFT, right? Still, the NFT is custodied by the Web2 company. Or maybe that they're issuing some type of token, but it's still issued by the Web2 company and custodied by them, where then interoperability becomes harder, right? So then we go back to this world of like, you know, one Web2 app that kind of does some crypto stuff, another Web2 app that kind of does some crypto stuff, but it's all still custodied. And really, like, I've lost that opportunity for interop. I think that's a world where then I have an identity for one app and then another app and then another app and then another app. And I really then am just doing what we're doing today already. For every sort of platform or surface we go to, we create a new identity. And I can't use my ENS, like chintantharakya.eth, anywhere I want to. Anywhere that I want to showcase my identity, I can't use it. I think if we start going down that world, things get fragmented. Interoperability is gone. And then you start thinking about, like, hey, am I putting all my eggs in this .eth basket and this identity basket in my wallet? Or, you know, do I need to, like, think about it differently?
And do you think the consumer will think about that? Like, do you think when they're actively using their same Gmail to create an account on this crypto native platform that ends up generating a wallet for them via email, and that's a one-time use wallet or it's a platform-specific wallet, do you think they will reflect on that and be like, wow, I've signed into like 16 different platforms in the last month. I have fractionalized my identity. Is there a way to siphon all that that fragmented data into one wallet? My belief is that they won't, but maybe you have a different take.
No, I think it'll be hard. I think it'll be really hard as we go down this road of like one click Web2 identity, create a one-off wallet or a burner wallet, like to consolidate all those wallets back into your main identity, it could be really tough, right? And that's why I think like we also have to think about the real use cases here, right? It's okay to make one-off wallets. Like that's fine. That's easy. And maybe, you know, that's not a bad security practice either, right? Like to really cordon off your important assets and keep them separate from your day-to-day sort of platform interactions. And there needs to be sort of a common fabric that if you want, right, you can still create this burner wallet, sign into FriendTech, and your .eth can be represented front and center, right? And I think that world will come. I think we'll start seeing like that fractionalization happen and people wanting to make it easier, a more seamless integrated experience as you sign into different platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious. I think a lot of like at Bello specifically, we work with Web2 and Web3 brands and the Web2 brands want the benefits of this data interoperability because it releases rich insights around who their users and potential future customers are and their lifetime value and all these metrics that they're used to in Web2. But also they want the Web2 experience of creating an account, of getting onboarded. And right now they have to make a trade-off. They really have to make a trade-off because the process of onboarding a Web2 user through the Web3 native way of creating that seed phrase, maybe even like using your face ID to import those keys into iCloud, just that like multi-step process still incurs drop-off. But it has the benefit of having that data, right? And brands can create further loyalty around that. But it comes at a cost to the user of actually getting sufficiently onboarded and comfortably onboarded to a new internet that they're unfamiliar with. So this brings me to my next question. Well, I guess you have something to add to that?
Well, no, like I'm cautiously optimistic. I think like this is a good step though, right? Like where if large Web2 brands are seeing the eventual benefits here, like it's okay to take a step that's not perfect. Like we're not going to have perfect steps along the way, but I think the most important thing is we are taking steps and that if Web2 brands want to be able to reach their user base, sure, log in with email, no big deal, right? But we're also seeing on the flip side, brands really interested in engaging with Web3 identities through messaging, right? And I think that's like really, really powerful where you can almost like subscribe as a Web3 user to a dApp, for example, and see and get notified like if you're about to get liquidated or if there's a protocol change or, you know, a new collection drops. Like, and I think that's just like a really powerful primitive where you can maintain whatever identity you want in Web3. The flip side, the dApps, the creators, et cetera, can reach out to the communities. And like that connection is established. So I think steps in that direction are still really, really good.
That brings me to my next question. Have you, through Coinbase Wallet's perspective and just leading engineering at Coinbase Wallet, have learned interesting user behaviors around wallet creation? And this is, I guess, like a follow-on question to, are people treating wallet creation at the moment the same way they treat like emails? Because I'm sure you and I'm sure you also have multiple emails that you use. You have your work email, your personal email, and previous emails that you've created in the past, but there's still this primary email that you use to navigate the Web2 internet. And I'm curious if you've learned anything about like certain user behaviors, maybe even that extends beyond that, that you could share around how people are using wallets or creating certain wallets around certain interactions and anything between.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Coinbase Wallet has like, I think it's done a great job of, we've made it really easy to create new wallets, both new mnemonics, so like brand new seed phrases, as well as derived addresses. So you just like tap a button in the wallet and boom, you can just go off and start creating wallets. You can also, for every single wallet, claim a free DID, a free CBID. So you can establish like an identity for each and every single one, right? And name them how you want. And so I don't think like we see one totally generalized pattern of users creating wallets. What we do see is, because wallets today are quite functional in their nature. So what can you do? You can use a wallet to mint NFTs. So some folks may like create a mint.levy.eth in your example, right? A subdomain. Some folks may just use Levy, like in your example, use levy.eth as the primary identity. So you can still have that be the parent, right? We see folks creating wallets like a vault where stuff only goes into that address. They never use that address for signing any transaction, any smart contract, no interactions with the dApp. So like they treat it like a vault. And then like some folks may even create a new wallet identity or a new address for like chats, right? And so like a lot of this is like based on like functional separation. Like I want to use a wallet to mint, I want to use another one to chat, et cetera, et cetera. Also, some folks just do it all in one shot and all in one place, and that's okay. But I think there is this like untapped feature in ENS that I'm starting to see more and more use of, like called subdomains, where you can sort of like specify then for a parent ENS, like levy.eth or chintantharakia.eth or basecafe.eth, you can then specify like a subdomain. So like when we did basecafe, we had various different subdomains. For paying, for ordering, even for trivia, right? And it helps just like separate concerns, helps separate where funds are going, things like that. And yeah, you're right. Like in my Web2 world, I have a Coinbase email, my Gmail, et cetera, et cetera. But I think like, why? And the real simple answer to the why is because there was no other option, right? If I'm with Coinbase, I got to make a Coinbase email. Gmail is for all my personal stuff, right? And then that's kind of the totality of it. I have like different Gmails for sort of different purposes, like one's just for like receipts, one's like only personal email, things like that. So I think there's like very similar analogs here. But I think like the advantage of how we think about identities in Web3 is, A, I have way more flexibility with the ENS system. And capabilities to set it up how I want to set it up. And I like what you said earlier, like you can present yourself to the world in the way that you want to represent yourself, right? And so in your case, it's going to be levy.eth, and that's how you set it up, and that's what you want everyone to see. In my case, it's chintantharakia.eth and you know, so on and so forth. In my case also, I want to make it really easy for people to reach me, right, if they want to. So like they know they can message me at that ENS. So I think we will see more and more wallets. But I think right now there are a lot of separation on like functional pieces with these wallets and like the activities people want to do.
Yeah, I love that answer. I think this is a good transition into speaking a bit more into wallet-to-wallet communication. The use case that I'm particularly very excited about, and I'll tell you why. For the longest time, being a creator and creating this podcast Mint and this newsletter, I've always struggled with using other people's networks, other platforms' networks, who have theoretically owned the relationship that I have with my audience. And the reason why I'm so compelled to use NFTs as a way to form, as a way to community build, is because I have direct access, more direct access to my users and to my audience and to my listeners than I do through Spotify or Apple Music or Substack or YouTube. And when I build a community of collectors, I theoretically, I guess indirectly, own that data, right? Nobody can take that away from me. And for the longest time, I've always struggled, even before Mint, with communication. Newsletters are have always been a point of friction because depending on the platform that you create your newsletter on, there could be different open rates, different click-through rates, different deliverability rates. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And I think the biggest opportunity for my use case is that these new feature sets, these new protocols and primitives are going to empower a new class of creators to own their audience and monetize their audience in different ways than we've never seen before. For me, I'm particularly very, very excited about this. And my time between splitting between Mint and Bello has been through the curiosity of trying to understand how can we build better tools for creators. And I'll be the practitioner throughout that entire process. And it's why we integrated XMTP through Bello, because it served as a way for our users to communicate with their audience more in a more compelling fashion than they ever would through necessarily like a newsletter blast or through a tweet. And it's this like new gray area that has is like a robust field of like experimentation. And it feels very fresh. It feels very new. It feels like we are writing the rules day by day by day as to how this is going to be treated and how people are going to be using this format as specifically around building audiences. You know, Mint is also primarily a podcast for the creator economy. We've had more of a technical discussion. I'm curious if you have any ideas or if you have any forms of excitement as to how these new integrations through Coinbase Wallet, being how adopted that it is, can empower a new class of creators. Any thoughts around that?
Yeah. I think when we think about messaging, a lot of the conversation steers towards like one-to-one messages, right? It's messaging, like that's the purpose. And then, you know, we talked about how Coinbase Wallet, we wanted to prioritize, and we did, how to do P2P payments through messaging. And the cool thing is like, for sending USDC in Coinbase Wallet on low-cost L2s, we cover all the gas for you. So like, there's no excuse anymore. Like, you get some USDC, boom, you can send it, you can split the bill, you can send it to your friends, you can collect money, you can do rent if you want. We've seen like really interesting use cases. And I think there's this like real neat intersection between what you describe, which is you control the relationship to your community, to your creators. Your community. As a creator, you control the relationship. Your community then also has an opportunity to subscribe or not subscribe, et cetera, right? And they can opt out, which you would expect in any kind of messaging. But I think the next level of experimentation we need to think through is like, what are the more interesting ways now to engage a community? So for example, like, yeah, sure. Hey, the new Mint podcast came out. Boom. Awesome. Okay. That's just a message. That's awesome. Click here. Okay, great. Be careful though. Obviously, if what you click on, spammers are out there too, and we're tackling that. But, you know, for example, we saw each other at Mainnet, and one of the interesting experiments we're running is like, when you walk into in real life activation, it could also be virtual too, and you engage with another messaging party, how might you immediately deliver back value? So at Base Cafe at Mainnet, users would scan a QR code. They would check in by sending GM, and we'd give them, you know, an update on what's going on at Base Cafe, all
love that
on-chain experiences.
Love that.
But right on top of that, we airdrop them an NFT. We airdrop them an NFT on Base so that, hey, welcome to Base Cafe. It's now part of your Base Cafe collection wallet. When folks would order coffee at the coffee bar, they would punch in their order through messaging. And when their order was ready, the messaging system, we set it up and set up the whole system so that it airdropped an NFT of the Base Cafe in New York, right? So a really like pretty NFT. And same with things like merch, right? You buy some merch, conduct an on-chain transaction, and boom, we airdrop you the digital twin of that merchandise. And so there's this really like also interesting set of use cases where you do X, get Y, right? Check in, get an NFT, buy some merch, get the digital twin, right? And that's like one cohort of like interesting use cases that are actually you're able to do as a builder. Anyone can do this as a builder because messaging in Coinbase Wallet powered by XMTP, it's permissionless, it's decentralized, and you can set up these experiences where a message is received and you trigger through a smart contract an on-chain sort of do X, get Y, and then you can reward, you know, your community if you need to, right? And so you start getting these like really interesting use cases of potentially microloans or NFT transfers that where there's an escrow holder of these NFTs. And all of this is like of, you know, possible as a builder because one, the protocol itself allows you to do it and it's permissionless. But two, you also just need a hookup to a smart contract. And that's like, I think in totality, that sums up really nicely. Like messaging helps people get connected in a very simple way using your decentralized ID. Cool. But all the experiments, all the utility you can build on top of that inside of messaging, I think that's where I'm excited to see over the next, you know, 6 months, new ideas really flourish because it brings us to like utility with the person we've likely met or know of because I see their identity, mm-hmm. I double check on Twitter or some other sort of place of proof. And then I can like do utility with them, right? And then, you know, if I'm going into these activations like Base Cafe, we also allow people to be delighted, right? And that's like, I don't know, for me, it's really important. Like crypto's cool, but delighting users is even mm-hmm. better. And if you know, if blockchain tech is like powering it underneath the hood, that's cool, but just got to delight users.
Before we wrap up this interview, Chintan, I've been thinking about this idea for a minute now, and I'm curious if you have any thoughts around it. Will there ever be a point where we call wallets? Have you ever thought about that? Is that crazy?
No, I don't think that's crazy. But like, it's less about even calling the wallet. Rather, you could call, you know, the identity, right? Like, I think, you know, right now, because I think the short answer is yes, that would be pretty cool. And like, there's sure, why not, right? Because we can sort of do that on many communications platforms today. Telegram, Signal, WhatsApp, like you can still do an, you know, voice over IP call, right? And so naturally people want to communicate with each other. There's text, there's recorded voice, and there's live voice. All three things are used in different ways across mm-hmm. the world based on, you know, where you are. So there's nothing holding us back necessarily from using a voice over IP call to like reach an identity, right? Reach a decentralized identity. The plumbing has to be in place, et cetera, et cetera. You got to build it, but like, it's not wild. It's not wild at all.
I'm excited for that one. I want to be able to call you whenever and bother you at 2 a.m, Chintan. So
you already have one way to do that through Coinbase Wallet messaging. And I appreciate it. But yes, let's get to calling.
Let's get to calling. Chintan, this was great. Thank you so much for your time. This was a really, really insightful conversation. I'm glad we did a deep dive all about wallets. It's a topic that I haven't really thought too much about, and you've opened my mind up to new avenues that we'll be chatting more offline about. I also want to say that we should do another episode in the near future because I know in the next 6 months, this is going to look completely different and new use cases are going to come up that we should be documenting. So long story short, appreciate your time. And thank you for being on.
Appreciate you too, Adam. This was super fun. I want to talk in 6 months for sure. This was just like really exciting. I'm excited, like excited for folks to try stuff, try utility, get on chain. That's what we got to do.
And if somebody wants to find you, where can they find you on Twitter, on Ethereum? Where can we find you?
All the same, Chintan Tharakia. So Twitter at Chintan Tharakia, ChintanTharakia.eth. Those are probably two of the easiest ways to get a hold of them.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Chintan.
What's up, guys? Thank you for listening. If you've gotten this far, then you are a champ, and I owe you a free listener pin. Go to adamlevy.io/NFT, fill in your info, and I'll distribute the NFT towards the end of the season. By collecting your pin, you prove your contribution to the season and get exclusive access to content, allow lists, and more. So be sure to collect yours. Also, please make sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. This helps me out so much. And finally, hit me up on Twitter at LevyChain. I want to hear what you're building, the latest crowdfund you're trying to complete, or if you simply want to chat. I love talking about where crypto meets the creator economy, and it's no different if it's coming from you directly. So thanks again for your support. It means the world, and I'll see you on the next episode.